if you look at the geography, and you know, geopolitics is all about geography, the proximity, the close border relationship. You know, the Israelis have been dealing with this threat forever, it seems like, going back to the Black September days of the radical Palestinian groups, the Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine, certain groups like Fatah and so forth. And we certainly have suffered our tragedies as well. When I say we, the Americans, in 1976, we had the U.S. ambassador and our economic officer that was kidnapped and murdered in Beirut. You know, the whole laundry list of just misery and assassinations and bombings is very long inside of Lebanon.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm Robin Johnson, and today the United States finds itself involved in another Middle East conflict. And I thought it might be useful for our listeners to get some historical perspective on American involvement in the Middle East, and specifically in Iran. So I have as my guest today the co-author of a book that certainly enlightened me on the background of Middle East conflict, and I think it will you as well. It's very important and timely. This book was written in 2018, but I think it's got some valuable lessons for today. So I'm very, very excited to have my guest on today to talk about it. His name is Fred Burton, and the book that he co-authored is called Beirut Rules, The Murder of a CIA Station Chief and Hezbollah's War Against America. Fred is a former State Department special agent and New York Times bestselling author. He co-authored this book with Samuel Katz. Fred, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Oh, thank you so much, Robin. I greatly appreciate you caring about Bill's story.
This was tough to read because I'm old enough to remember this, and it's like one of those things for our listeners when you know something's going to happen, like in a movie, and you hope it doesn't have the outcome that it does, and you keep hoping something different happens. But I remember this. I think for our listeners, if the best way to start, Fred, would be to take us back and just set the stage for this, when the book took place, the events that took place, and just provide a background for the events that followed.
Sure. Robin, I've been dealing with Iran and Hezbollah since 1980, when I was on the scene of an assassination attempt in Bethesda, Maryland, where an Iranian dissident was shot and killed in literally my hometown. And when I became a special agent with the State Department, I was assigned to the CIA's Hostage Location Task Force, which was inside of the CIA's Counterterrorism Center. And our efforts were put together during that time period to focus on all the Western hostages that were kidnapped and held hostage in Lebanon, specifically the CIA station chief by the name of Bill Buckley. But the backdrop to Bill's abduction certainly centers around the 1979 U.S. Embassy Tehran takeover, in addition to the 1983 U.S. Embassy bombing in Beirut, the 1984 U.S. Embassy bombing in Beirut, and the 84 Embassy bombing in Kuwait, in addition to the hijacking of TWA 847, which was on the tarmac in Beirut by Hezbollah, and resulted in the death of U.S. Navy diver Robert Stedham. So that was the whole time period where I was involved with pretty much all these cases, but we were laser fixated on what happened to Bill, how could this happen, and where was he, and could we find him so there could be some degree of a rescue put into place.
Now, and to put things in context, too, you know, as we know, Israel is our ally in the Middle East, and Iran, since 1979, has been an enemy. But a lot of what takes place in this book is in Lebanon. Why is that kind of the focal point of what was going on there?
Well, in 1982 is when we really first start to see the rise of Hezbollah, but we really did not know them to be that during that window of time when they struck Israeli military facilities inside of Lebanon. And this was post Israeli invasion of Lebanon, very similar to what we're seeing kind of unfold now in Lebanon, but in a different era and time frame. You know, the most interesting aspect about this, Robin, is as we looked at the group that was responsible for all these acts of terrorism, they identified themselves as the Islamic Jihad Organization. And I'm here to tell you that we had absolutely no visibility into who they were. And we spent months, if not years now in retrospect, trying to figure out the degree of relationship with Hezbollah, whether they were Hezbollah, the degree of Iranian control over the organization. And the reason that we were so blind, to be blunt, was a direct result of this strategic strike by this group known as the Islamic Jihad Organization on the U.S. Embassy in 1983, which literally took out the CIA station in our eyes and ears of what was unfolding in Lebanon. So that was a brilliant strike on the part of ultimately Iran, which resulted in us being just blinded by the development that was taking place. The other thing to keep in mind too, Robin, just for the benefit of your listeners, is this was an interesting time period in American foreign policy and from the development of the counterterrorism angle. You know, the Cold War was still raging. You know, the enemy was Russia, the Soviet Union at the time. So our efforts to play catch up on counterterrorism or just terrorism in general is really hard to fathom. And it was something that we really lacked a complete kind of strategy on how to deal with. But, you know, at the end of the day, for many, many years in Lebanon, the group known as Hezbollah was winning and had a tremendous amount of American and Israeli blood on their hands, to include the bombing of the U.S. Marine Corps barracks in Beirut as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, some of our older listeners may recall some of these events, the Marine barracks, certainly one of them, the embassy. There was just a lot of those that were going on at that time. And some other, I guess, tactics. It goes to, I guess, the name of your book, Beirut Rules. If you could define that a little bit for our listeners as well, because it's directly relevant to the story.
When you looked at the Cold War in general, we had Moscow rules, which there was kind of a detente between the intelligence agencies, and everybody kind of knew their role and knew their place. And for the most part, there was nobody really killing each other in the intelligence services. Beirut took it to another level. Therefore, you had Beirut rules, where you ended up with intelligence agency, spy agency versus spy agency, pretty much meeting and getting together and keeping an eye on each other. And it really kind of changed the whole paradigm of how intelligence agencies operate. You know, the first thing you learn in that business, I learned early on, is there are no friendly intelligence services. And, you know, that might be a hard pill to swallow for some of your listeners, but it's true. In essence, Beirut was kind of like the Casablanca of the Middle East during that time period. So you had every intelligence agency in the world operating there. You had the British MI6, you had the Israeli Mossad, you had the Lebanese Christian G2, you had the agency, of course, you had the French operating. You were always bumping heads and running into all these different agencies trying to make sense of what was actually taking place. And at the end of the day, who was this group that was winning while we were losing?
The strategic location, too, I think of Israel, which is on the border with Lebanon, and it exists today. I mean, I just picked up the paper today and see Israel's negotiating with Hezbollah for a ceasefire because they're located right there in southern Lebanon. And correct me if I get my geography wrong, right next to Israel, where they're lobbing rockets across the border, and Israel's retaliated.
Indeed, if you look at the geography, and you know, geopolitics is all about geography. The proximity, the close border relationship, You know, the Israelis have been dealing with this threat forever, it seems like, going back to the Black September days of the radical Palestinian groups, the Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine, certain groups like Fatah and so forth. And we certainly have suffered our tragedies as well. When I say we, the Americans, in 1976, we had the U.S. ambassador and our economic officer that was kidnapped and murdered in Beirut. You know, the whole laundry list of just misery and assassinations and bombings is very long inside of Lebanon.
I would add for our listeners, somebody whose name they might be familiar with, one of the casualties was the president of American University, Malcolm Kerr, who's the father of, if you're Chicago Bulls fan, Steve Kerr, who was part of the championship years and has also coached the Golden State Warriors. That was his dad that was just tragically murdered. He was president of American University. But this was going on, Fred, and it seemed like, I mean, you listed it out, and there were kidnappings of Americans, numerous hijackings of airplanes, people killed and tossed out on the tarmac. It seemed like reading this book, I kept waiting for, when are we going to respond? Why was there such a delay in us, in the United States, taking forceful action in response to this?
Well, Rob, and I still lay awake at night at times thinking about our failures from that standpoint. I think there was not a focus from a national security perspective on terrorism, to be blunt, at a strategic perspective. I don't think the intelligence community was geared to deal with this asymmetric enemy that had developed in the slums and streets of Beirut. You know, certainly we had fought these kinds of wars in the jungles of Vietnam and so forth, but not in that urban environment like Beirut. And to be honest with you, there was months and years where we just lacked human intelligence to understand what we were up against. In essence, we had no human assets to be able to tell us about these threats that were coming, about the location of the hostages. And, you know, I'll tell you how bad it was at points. You know, we would occasionally get some overhead satellite imagery. In those days, it was just one satellite shot a day. It's nothing like today. There was no cell phones to work with. And we would marry up our debriefing reports of hostages with physical descriptions of buildings and literally look at overhead imagery with a magnifying glass, trying to figure out where some of these buildings were located. That's how far back we were in an analog kind of environment. So without those human assets and the inability to develop those human assets on the ground, we were just always pushing a boulder up a hill.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVAK, Quad Cities NPR. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Fred Burton, who's co-author of a very important book called Beirut Rules, The Murder of a CIA Station Chief and Hezbollah's War Against America. The co-author is Samuel Katz. Fred and I have been talking a little bit about kind of the background of his book. And I got to tell you, if you're interested in learning more about the backdrop of our current war in the Middle East against Iran, there are a few sources better than this one. Fred and his co-author really take us through a lot of what happened during that period, which I'm old enough to remember. But for those of you who are younger or maybe weren't paying attention, it really... this provides some, I think, really good background on this. One of the central actors throughout this is the CIA station chief named William Buckley, not the founder of National Review magazine, but this is a true American patriot that I think his story needs to be shared more because of what he did, not only in the Middle East, but his career before that. But could you please talk just a little bit about Bill Buckley?
I would be honored to. Bill was an American hero who, throughout his career, was running towards danger. He had volunteered right out of high school to go to the Korean War as an enlisted soldier, where he was awarded the Silver Star for rushing a machine gun nest. He comes back, goes to college on the GI Bill, joins the CIA, actually becomes one of Kennedy's first Green Berets in Vietnam, where he's dispatched and he's awarded a second Silver Star in Vietnam. He was known as one of those gunslingers, one of the paramilitary types inside the agency. You know, there's a very much a caste system inside the CIA where you've got your traditional case officers, you know, your Harvard grads, your Yale grads, and so forth. Bill was a blue-collar paramilitary type that was always being dispatched to these hot spots around the globe. So after the embassy bombing in 1983, which was just horrific and devastating to the intelligence community, Bill raised his hand and said, "I'll go." And his mission was to go into Beirut to try to stand up the CIA operations so we could kind of understand who was this group that blew up the embassy in 83. So Bill's job was to do that. I spoke to most of his counterparts that were working with Bill at the time that he was working in Lebanon. But before I ever started the book, Robin, I approached the CIA and explained to them what I wanted to do, asked for their help to declassify some records and some photographs and so forth. And then I approached Bill's family. Bill had a sister that was still alive, as well as a long-term companion, girlfriend. And they were very protective of their loved one, and rightfully so. So I had to work my charm a little bit and let them know that I just wanted to tell the story of an American hero. And I was very proud of the fact that both of them greatly enjoyed the book. I really relied upon them to help me understand Bill as a young man who always wanted to be a soldier. And, you know, it's one of those stories that I thought needs to be told. I was truly honored that President Bush 41 actually wrote a testimonial blurb for the book jacket. You know, it's tough to grab a president to be able to do that, but I knew that since he had been a former CIA director, that this is the kind of loss that he also would take personally. And he was kind enough to write me a beautiful blurb, which I know I'll never be able to get another one like that going forward. But my mission was to highlight the story of a true American hero, one who volunteered to run towards danger like so many in the military and the intelligence community, and hopefully inspire others that wanted to go into the business of trying to safeguard our country from a range of different threat actors that are out there.
It's easy to do, but when you look back on it, as I was reading this, and I knew what the outcome was, but I was a little surprised that there wasn't more security for him. But and I know it's not easy to do, but I think our listeners need to know from this book what happened to Bill Buckley.
Well, one morning, Bill got up, dressed, went down from his flat in Beirut, and was immediately overtaken by vehicles with Hezbollah thugs with AK-47s that just overwhelmed him, kidnapped him, threw him in a car, and they vanished into the southern suburbs of Beirut. As you can imagine, that sent shockwaves through the intelligence community, through the CIA. You know, Bill's position there as the eyes and ears of America's intelligence agency, the senior man, was kidnapped, and we had no idea where he was. And that was our mission at the Hostage Location Task Force, was an effort to find Bill. And we figured if we could find Bill, we could find all the other Western hostages. You know, looking back on my career, Robin, you know, and I explained this to the family too. I don't think we did enough in retrospect. I want to give ourselves a little bit of credit that we did the best we could with the times and the lack of technology and the lack of sources and so forth. But, you know, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about Bill and think about the horrific situation where he lied in captivity. And we know this from doing interviews with his friends and colleagues, that his biggest fear was being kidnapped and held captive, because one of his very close friends had been kidnapped and held captive, a POW in Vietnam. And I just hate to even think what Bill was thinking going through this ordeal. But in the government, it takes tragedy to force change. I've seen that again my entire career. And as a result of Bill's kidnapping, the U.S. government, the intelligence community, the State Department, the CIA did a much better job of protecting America's senior intelligence officers around the globe, especially in these dangerous locations. So there were some very positive developments that came out of that as a result of that. But, you know, some lessons in life are very hard. And I only regret that we could not get to Bill in time. Unfortunately, Bill passed away in captivity. He had been brutally tortured. One of the things that is still I'm fixated on is we know for a fact that Bill was held under Iranian control in what was called the Sheikh Abdullah Barracks. We know that Bill was interrogated by an Iranian who I assume to be an Iranian spook by the name of Ali, who either came from Tehran or came from the Iranian embassy in Beirut. We also believe that Bill and the other hostages were held at one point inside the basement of the Iranian embassy in Beirut. And the FBI had some reports through some of their sourcing that Bill may have even been flown to Tehran for a bit for enhanced interrogation. So Bill suffered a horrendous fate. And again, a lot of failures on our part in our inability to find him. You know, I want to believe that if we could have located him, that the president would have authorized a rescue team, whether it be Delta or SEAL team, to go in and get him. But we never, ever had enough on-the-ground tactical data to pinpoint where he was on any given point in time and or location.
Your book, towards the end, traces through what happened after all this and Khobar Towers explosion. Some of this continued. And the first World Trade Center bombing. And for our listeners, again, I'm not a warmonger or anything, but Iran's fingerprints are on almost every activity that takes place here. And I guess I think that's important information. And I don't, in my time remaining, I don't have a time left, unfortunately. It seemed like September 11th terrorist attacks is what finally unleashed our intelligence agencies to take strong action. And I know that offends a lot of people that may be thinking, what about our civil liberties, etc. But that seemed to be the turning point that finally we were able to catch some of the perpetrators behind these actions.
Very much so. It took, that horrendous loss of American life to unleash, the greatest military power in the world to go after these terrorist groups and individuals, Robin. One interesting side note to this, as you look at today, part of the negotiation team by Iran in Islamabad, one of the key negotiators is a former head of their intelligence service who is directly involved with the kidnapping and the disappearance of a former FBI and CIA officer by the name of Robert Levinson. So that just kind of shows you, the state of play with Iran and, where we are today with the Iranian regime.
Fred, I've got like 3 minutes left. I want to give you adequate time here, and I hope it is, my closing question. But I shut this book, the last page, and I thought, boy, and again, I'm not going to take a side pro or con on the Iran war, but I think if this information was known to the public, Iran's role in killing hundreds of Americans, and we really never sought retribution that I'm aware of, do you think this might influence people's view? I don't think President Trump has really mentioned this part of it. Do you think he should? And would it influence, you think, the American public on perhaps gaining support for the actions taken?
I very much think so. I think if the American public knew the laundry list of direct Iranian commissions of various acts of terrorism from BA Argentina with destruction of the Israeli embassy to the bombing of the Jewish daycare there in BA Argentina to the laundry list of deaths of U.S. Americans and heroes like Bill Buckley, it might help shape a little bit of opinions as to, you know, how this war unfolds. If there is a positive note, and, you know, I'm not like you, a warmonger by any stretch of the imagination. As best I can tell through my research, the Israelis and the Americans combined have literally taken out and eliminated every Hezbollah individual that was involved with all these horrendous acts of terror that took place in the 1980s. You know, as a former federal law enforcement officer, I would have much preferred to see those individuals brought into custody and tried in the U.S. court so they could answer for their crimes. But there's a side of me that's also okay with the fact that we've managed to eliminate those who cause so much death and destruction to our personnel.
Well, Fred, it's, again, an outstanding book and very timely. Fred and I were talking, for our listeners, Fred and I were talking before I started recording that I can't remember what brought me to this book, but I've had it for a year or two, and it was sitting there, and after this latest Iran war, I picked it up, and I'm glad I did, because it provides a good historical background on the United States conflicts with Iran that sometimes weren't in the open, but they were definitely there. And I think, I think for our listeners, I mean, at least knowing this information, and if it could have been articulated, would have been given a little more understanding of perhaps a backdrop to the United States' actions in Iran. But again, the book is called Beirut Rules, The Murder of a CIA Station Chief and Hezbollah's War Against America. You're going to find a lot of information. You're going to read about an American patriot who isn't perhaps that well known in the history books, but is a true American patriot. And some of this book is redacted, so some of the information had to be held back because it was confidential. But Fred, thank you so much for writing this book, and thank you so much for taking the time to be my guest today.
Thank you, Robin, for caring about Bill's story and for the history of Iran's attacks against America. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.